Shortly after marrying, Rapoport grows interested in secular and Haskalah literature and teaches himself several languages, classical, Semitic, and modern, as well as science. Much of this was going under the influence of Nachman Krochmeil, who was a tremendous influence on his life. While continuing his Torah studies, he joins a young pioneering circle of Maskilim forming then in Lemberg, and in 1814 publishes an essay on Paris and the island of Elba anonymously. In order to earn a living, he leased the government kosher meat tax in the city. Haskalah was not an easy path in those days, as he here describes on your screen. Consider this, ye inhabitants of Germany, and you will be astounded. It is easy for you to avoid being one-sided and to study different scientists, for you possess many schools and teachers from every branch of learning. It is not so in Poland and Russia, even at present, much less was it so 40 years ago. There is no teacher, no guide, no supporter for the Jew who desires any sort of improvement. The Jew who wishes to enter on a new path of learning has to prepare the road for himself, and when he has entered on it, his friend will come to him and ask, "Is it true that you have got scientific books in your house?" Mind you, do not mention it to anyone. There are enough bigots in the town to persecute you and all your family if they get scent of it. And he was persecuted, falsely reported for getting married without a license, and then in 1816, anonymously put in cherem, along with several other maskilim, which was then a crime, a serious crime in Austria. Most likely, the anonymous cherem came from Lemberg's leading rabbi, Yaakov Orenstein, himself another important rabbinic scholar worthy of our attention, with whom Rapoport had been in regular conflict. This becomes something of a celebrated persecution by the local maskilim, although recent evidence suggests that Rapoport was no innocent party. He had accused him of plagiarism and informed on him to the government for collecting money on behalf of the land of Israel without a license. In the 1820s, Rapoport began to publish his own poetry, as well as translations of poems and plays in the periodical Bikurei Ayitim. Most importantly, She'arit Yehuda, a Hebrew adaptation of Racine's play Esther in 1827. In 1829, he establishes his reputation as a serious scholar by publishing, also in Bikurei Ayitim, a series of critical biographies of leading Gaonic and rabbinic figures. These biographies reflected Rapoport's comprehensive knowledge and rabbinic and scholarly skills, and they were showered with praise. For many years, Rapoport tried to find a position that would permit him to devote more time to research. Had that been an option, he very well might have preferred an academic career, which was then not an option for an unconverted Jew. In the mid-1820s, Joseph Pearl tried to appoint him to a teaching position in the rabbinical seminary he was attempting to establish, without success, in Tarnopol. In the early 1830s, Rapoport was forced to relinquish his position as leaseholder of the kosher meat tax in Lemberg, and so looks for rabbinic posts in Italy, Hungary, and Bohemia. Then in 1837, finally, Pearl persuaded him to submit his candidacy for the rabbinate of Tarnopol. He also receives a very strong letter of support from the Chatam Sofer, the leading voice of anti-modern orthodoxy at the time, and thereafter receives the appointment and assumes the position in the beginning of 1838, and he becomes thereby the first maskil to hold a formal rabbinic post in Galicia. Tarnopol, alas, proved short-lived. Not only the Hasidim, but also members of the local elite fiercely opposed his appointment, a number of local rabbinic figures, the wealthy, and even some moderate maskilim. Pamphlets accusing him of heresy were distributed. His seat in the synagogue was smeared with tar. Rumors circulated about flaws in his moral and religious conduct. After 3 years of such treatment, with Pearl no longer alive to defend him, Rapoport competed for a rabbinical post in Prague, and moved to that city in the summer of 1840, defeating another leading maskil, Rabbi Zvi Hirsch Chayes. And I think I chose to switch the pictures to the older Rapoport here because of the toll those years took on his life. He quickly overcame skepticism and was widely respected by the now Orthodox leaders of Europe, who corresponded with him widely. As a rabbi, Rapoport assumed responsibility for deciding halakha, while at the same time focusing on education and preaching. He viewed himself as a maskil who remained true to Jewish tradition, always careful to conduct himself according to accepted rabbinic standards, but active as a moderate maskil who exposed himself to the scholarly research of Wissenschaft des Judentums to which he contributed. He believed that general knowledge and critical discussion of the past and of traditional sources had a positive national value to the Jews as a people. And he viewed his appointment to the rabbinate as a realization of the modern yet moderate model of the traditional rabbi. Hence his adamant opposition in the mid-1840s to resolutions passed by the conferences of German Reform rabbis. For example, a pamphlet of his entitled Tochachat Megula in 1845 argued traditional halakha and the Hebrew language as essential for Jewish survival and considered major religious reforms as a goad to assimilation. On the other hand, Divrei Shalom Ve'emet in 1861, clearly echoing the classic Maskilic text from Naftali Hertz Wesley almost a century earlier, and there Rappaport defends Zacharias Frankel against critics, including the Neo-Orthodox rabbi founder Samson Raphael Hirsch. Frankel was the founder of the Positive Historical School denomination of Judaism, something akin to today's conservative Judaism, and it was a strong opponent of reform for its abandonment of halakha and abandonment of Hebrew in particular, but he was arguing for a far more progressive interpretation of halakha based on his ideas about the human influence of oral law. The juxtaposition of these positions, the attack on the Reform conferences, and the defense of Frankel highlight his overwhelming focus on Jewish unity. Where unity was impossible, where the Reform had cast off halakha and tradition beyond the pale, he fought hard against them, despite his earlier warm relations with Abraham Geiger, one of the most important Reform thinkers at the time, in whose journal Rappaport had frequently published. Where unity was possible, where change is wrought, where viewed as less central, he intended to forge it. Having experienced suppression of his own intellectual development, he remained extremely dedicated to the rights of man to explore ideas and recognized that space for a variety of approaches within Judaism, even questions that were beyond the pale, might have value in spurring rabbis to answer them well. And he points to the sages, Chazal's treatment of Elisha ben Abuya, known as Acher. Despite his famous heresy, he was still cited in the Talmud. And in Chagiga 15a, we see that Rabbi Meir went to learn from him, even though Acher was already openly violating Shabbat. Even then, Chazal tell us something good about Elisha, and that he prevented Reb Meir from going past the boundary permitted on Shabbat. Even after Elisha's death, Reb Meir prayed on his behalf despite his heresy. It's always possible to find an opposing source and tradition that supports an intolerant view, he wrote, but he views the cause of peace and unity as the key approach to these tensions. Indeed, this break in unity rests at the heart of his critique of reform. Hence the quote on your screen. Love of the entire nation is the very cornerstone in our striving for the continued existence of the Jewish people and the surest guarantee for its greatness. It is the very foundation of the Jewish religion upon which it can rest secure forever. His scholarly works from his years in Prague include a multi-volume Talmudic encyclopedia, an introduction to an 1860 edition of the medieval scholar Avraham ben Barchia's Hegyon HaNefesh, as well as many articles published in the Hebrew and German Jewish press. Rappaport served as the co-editor of the first seven volumes of a Hebrew Galician Maskilic annual, and his numerous letters, which were published in various periodicals and collections, serve as an important source for the history of both the Haskalah and Wissenschaft des Judentums in Eastern Europe. For its time, Rappaport's publications set a new standard for the investigation of the history of rabbinic Judaism. He served in Prague as a religious court judge, dayan, and teacher for 7 years, and in 1847 was appointed rabbi of the community, one of the most prestigious rabbinic posts in the world at the time. And he held this position for 20 years until his death in 1867. His death was widely mourned, and obituaries and biographies were frequently published in later years on significant anniversaries of his life and passing. If he's largely forgotten today among the Orthodox, it perhaps reflects the victory of Hirsch's separatist ideology, even within modern Orthodoxy, over Rappaport's ideal of a big tent. The tent had a limit, but it is far more inclusive than Hirsch envisioned. His entire life stands as testimony to the central role of Galicia in the history of modern Judaism and modern Jewish scholarship. Thanks.